take a time machine back to before the world went to hell, around the year 2000.
The 80s and 90s were so rad. The movies, the music, the TV, the games, that's what I want to talk about.
Like and subscribe on your favorite podcast app and continue the conversation on Facebook and Instagram. And if you're cool enough, join the show on Patreon for exclusive bonus content. And now, Less Than 2000 with Adam Wintz and Chad Bischoff.
Less Than 2000,
the podcast. Dude, I feel like it's been a longer hot minute. I was going to say it's been a hot minute, but it's been a longer than a hot minute because you've been in rehearsals and you just had opening weekend of the first play you've done in 25 years, maybe, right?
Since 99, 24 years, man. Whew.
24 years. How'd it go? How was opening weekend?
Awesome, man. It's awesome. Thanks for asking. It's awesome, dude. I got to tell you, what a rush. I mean, there's nothing that compares to it. Being on stage in front of a live audience with lights in your face, singing and yelling and making people laugh, being in my underwear, kissing.
Oh, so you're singing?
Yes.
Well, I mean, come on. Would you do anything else other than that? You know, there's got to be the kiss.
I got to tell you, it's a growth experience, Chad. It is a serious growth experience. Like, I am learning a lot about myself and growing a lot and pushing my boundaries, but I'm glad I took the journey. I'm so glad that I got out of my comfort zone and doing this again, because it is, there's a rush that nothing compares to this rush.
I don't think people realize how that feeling right before you step on stage, it is so real, and you've now just experienced this again. I have not in a long time, but I'm not kidding you. I still have the nightmare where I'm on the other side of the curtain, and it's about showtime, the curtain's about to go up, and in the dream I go, I don't know any of my lines! And I'm panicking, and sometimes I wake up in sweats at that moment. Sometimes I fight through it, and I think, man, I'm really killing it, even though I don't know a single thing that I'm talking about.
Right.
So, yeah, it's that. But I think that's what makes, if you don't have those nerves, if there's not a level of anxiety before you take that first step and settle in amongst the lights as everybody claps for the first time or whatever the situation is, like, you've got to be an insane person. I don't even know I can't even classify what this person, if you have absolutely no feeling at all,
yeah,
before you step on that stage, you are way too comfortable. And yes. I'm not talking professional. I'm saying way too comfortable.
Yeah. And I'm so happy I did this, am doing it, and will continue to do it. Like, once I've got this bug again, I can't just not do it again.
Ah.
I'd probably do like one play a year. I think that's plenty. One play a year.
Well, I mean, it sure does take a lot of your time.
Yes. Three months.
It's not just like, you know, oh, we're going to go rehearse on weekends. Oh, yeah. No. No, it's 3 months almost constantly of rehearsals. And yeah, it's
but the payoff is so great. And I'm just very happy to be doing it and can't wait to finish it out. But since I've gotten back into acting, I'm way more critical of individual actors and way more like appreciative of good performances. Because I'll tell you, like, it's hard. It's acting is really hard. You expose something of yourself to the world.
100%.
If you're doing it right. And one of these movies had very good acting in it. One of these movies had, I would say, one very good actor, and the rest was pretty mediocre. Today we are talking about Boys in the Hood versus Menace to Society, the two big early 90s hood films. Groundbreaking, landmark, watershed moments in cinema history. Two very similar but also very different films. We are going to break it down. When I mentioned one of them has great acting pretty much throughout, and one of them has one good actor and pretty much mediocre throughout, which films did you think I was talking about?
I mean, I got to be honest. I don't really want to answer that question, but I think it's pretty evident. It's the one that also, because I have to bring this up, had at least double the budget. Okay, so the one that had the better acting, Boys in the Hood, also had double the money, which gave them more time for takes and to fix more of those problems. So I do think it's funny, and the reason why I chuckled when you said you've been this paying attention to acting. I love how just. We would have had to say that because it was opening weekend for you, no matter what movie we did. We could have been doing Don't Be a Menace.
Yes.
And, or, you know, any other movie we could have been talking about, and you would have had to say the exact same thing. But no, we happened to land this week on, Boys in the Hood and Menace to Society. So I just, I chuckled at that.
Yes. Lawrence Fishburne and Cuba Gooding Jr. are very good actors, and their scenes where they just got to play together are some of my favorite. I just totally bought their dynamic, and I totally bought their world and their relationship and their them as individual characters and actors. And I thought they were good. I thought they were Ricky was good. I thought Ice Cube was very good for his you know debut, and he started doing the shtick that he has done the rest of his career now. I think
That was a big moment for Ice Cube.
Yes, definitely. So there's some good acting in John Singleton's Boys in the Hood. Now, anything that you want to say off the top before I get to your overall impressions?
No, because I want to. I kind of want to work into this because I think it's important. Just as you said, one had good acting, better or much better acting,
top to bottom.
I agree, but I think that also goes to the cinematography. I think it also goes to the production design. I think it also goes to the overall story. It literally is everything. Not that I'm diminishing Menace to Society. I'm saying one clearly had more stars, more money, more backing, more planning, more production. It literally had everything. So I think it's important as we go down this road to dissect that budget and shooting allotment days play into how these movies look and feel. Mm-hmm. Menace to Society, in a lot of ways, is a much cooler film because it's grittier and it's more raw, and they didn't have time to do take after take to get it right. You know,
it's more like a play.
You had to. Yeah, you had to push through it. Yeah. You had to push through it. You had to grind it out. And having done independent film, I know how hard that is. I know how hard it is when you want that extra take and you just don't have it and you just can't get it. And then you're in the edit room. You're like, how do I need to cut around this? Because no matter how good a performance is, not on stage, in film, you're always editing. You're always tweaking to get the actor's performance exactly the way you want to portray it. And so more money gives you more time and better reach and better access, better recovery, better reshoots, all that stuff. So I think for what Menace to Society was, is a super low budget film for of that time, very, very low budget.
Yeah.
I don't think we can compare everything without drawing that very important piece in that one had a lot more time and resources than the other. And for what they had, I mean, I told you, Menace to Society really made me feel something, and it wasn't awesome.
Yeah, Boys in the Hood was written as part of his film school application. John Singleton wrote to get into film school. And then the Hughes brothers, who did Menace to Society, you know, Boys in the Hood came out 2 years before, was insanely successful, very groundbreaking. They wanted to take it a step further and kind of show, they say it,
white people
how it really is. Because the fundamental, these films are very, very similar in many, many ways. Aside from the production things that Chad pointed out. But for me,
but catastrophically different in story when you really get to the micro level.
Oof, when you get to the micro level, but on a macro level, it's teenagers growing up in the hood that are conditioned to certain conditions. They cannot get out. It's very hard to get out. The whole thing is the main character trying to get out. And can you or can't you do that? And main characters die at the end, and it's very dramatic and all that stuff. There are a lot of parallels between these. The main thrust of the film, John Singleton's Boys in the Hood, was, for as groundbreaking as it was, and I'm taking nothing away from how important Boys in the Hood was, it was much more of a movie feel to it. It kind of ties it up in a nice little bow. It does leave you with some positivity at the end. Yes, tragic things happen, but it's not all screwed up. There is a prologue. There is a resolution to it all. One of the characters gets out, whereas Menace to Society, the reverse is true. It is hopeless. It is dark. Nobody gets out. It is the whole film is way less with a bow tied around it, more like this is how it is. There is no rhyme or reason to it. It doesn't just fit into these nice little thematic themes that white America would want to see. This is the real stuff. So from a presentation standpoint, it really could not be more different. Singleton's movie, very polished. Part of that is the budget. Menace to Society, very raw.
Did you know that you can change what you taste by what you hear? How can you use sound to make a deeper connection with your clients? Can we be healed with sound? Sound influences people in their buying decisions and their daily lives. In the podcast Audio Branding, I explore all of this, both with my own observations as a voice actor of over 15 years and by interviewing knowledgeable professionals in the field of advertising, marketing, music, and science. To have a listen for yourself, visit audiobrandingpodcast.com.
Yeah. And I mean, and I will say both of them didn't have huge budgets either. but that's what I was saying about Menace to Society, that I don't think you would want to have a bigger budget on that script because
it helped.
It was meant to shock you. You know, Boys in the Hood was meant to, like you said, from start to finish, give you a story of what it's like in the hood and how some people can't make it out while providing hope. And that is the very classic. It's a very classic LA story.
Yes.
You still got to have the bow. You're still going to shock people. You're still going to do this and that. Yes, people do die. There is a lot of those things, and it is tough to watch. But it's, like you said, it's much more like watching a portrait of life, whereas Menace to Society, I literally sat there with like a shiv in my side, like mouth open, trying to suck down a cigar.
Yes.
While trying to sit. And I am feeling absolutely terrible for watching it and feeling like I am in pain watching it and feeling like I don't know, like this is horrid. This is horrid. And when you stop and you think about people that are put down in society that don't have hope, this is the difference in the big movies. If you don't have hope that you're going to have a better future, that you're going to make it out, and all you see around you is this, you're going to do whatever the hell you need to do to survive, whether that's shoot somebody, whether that's steal something, whether it's, so you're going to do that no matter what. You starve any person on this planet long enough, they're going to go steal and eat, right? So at a certain point, you have to sort of like, you have to kind of remove the society, like the society you and I grew up in, way different. I mean, not even anything close to anything similar to what was in Menace to Society or Boys in the Hood. So to then sort of like put yourself in that place and then start thinking, and this is why I said it's been like an evolution process, where you start thinking about like, well, what would you do if you were in this position where you felt like you couldn't get out? If you have no hope, what does it matter? You know, and when you're conditioned to live that way, it what seems like in Menace to Society is just like, hey, it happens and I don't care about it. It's because they're kind of conditioned to not care about it because you don't know how to care.
It spoke to us. We cared about the people. We cared about the issues that they were talking about in these films. And that we're ahead of our time, massively ahead of our time for our age, for our background to fall in love with these movies and make them our own and grow up all of our teen years watching them over. I showed so many people these movies growing up. And yeah, some of it was like, haha, guns, haha, funny lines. But no, when I looked back on it, I was like, I was emotionally affected by these films. And I'm glad I was. And I still am today. They're great films. They have a great message. And my worst fears were not realized. I'm like proud of 12-year-old Adam and Chad for having watched these films and loving them. For 2 days, I've been searching to see the debate about this, and it's pretty evenly split. But a lot of people prefer Menace to Society because they say it's more raw, more real. And you know, Boys in the Hood, great movie, great actor. The death scene is way more emotionally effective. But yeah, they're actors. They're actors doing scenes rather than people are like, I know O-Dog. O-Dog is a guy that I went to school with or a guy from my neighborhood or whatever. And yeah, there is no point to the violence. There is no point to all these things. And there is no fixing it, and there's no hope. And Menace to Society completes that picture.
That's more true. That's what I was trying to say earlier with when you have no hope and you don't think you're going to make it out. You know, there is no rhyme or reason if what you're going to do. You're going to do whatever you feel like doing, you know?
Yes.
And I mean, that's just it. And that's why Menace to Society was so much harder to watch. But probably far more important. If you really want to start making a statement on what's happening.
To me, I think I have such a, it's so funny to me how many times we've talked about things on these shows and I'm like, these are the exact same. And you're like, they're very different. And like, it happens a lot on these shows. And I don't know who's right. I think the answer is somewhere in between. But I can't, to me, if you want to have the picture of everything, you have to have both of these films. You do need some of the hopeful stuff. You can't just have all the bleak stuff. You do need to show the connection that, like, yes, there are parents out there who care about their kids and are trying to save them and break the cycle. On the other side, you need to show not everybody has that. Not everybody has Lawrence Fishburne for a dad who's gonna like tell him what's up. You know,
yeah, because the grandparents in Menace to Society did not cut it in my mind.
No, because I just say they just pushed religion on him, and that wasn't doing anything for Kane.
Yeah,
so he just tuned out the religion stuff. They tried; their heart was, I guess, in the right place, but they were so ill-equipped to deal with it that there was no saving Kane by thumping the Bibles for sure. And so I think you need both of these films to really get the full picture of life in the hood.
You do.
According to me, drinking from my
Life in the Hood,
Garfield mug. By the way, I just wanted to get on the record. The best main actor of Menace to Society said there's one quality actor in the main cast. Lorenz Tate as O-Dog. Nailed it. I mean,
yeah, he did great.
Everybody identifies with him and he's like a meme still because he was so good. And just nail, but there's no redeeming quality to him. He's not particularly funny. He's not a good person in any stretch of the imagination. He doesn't do anything good in the whole film. Yet this is the film and this is the character that more, I think, people identify with as being, quote, real, largely because of O-Dog and how good Lorenz Tate was in his first big thing. And he looked like a kid, yet he's just killing people left and right without remorse. And he survives.
Yeah.
He's the one that survives.
Because that's the kind of stupid stuff that happens in real life. The wrong person dies. I mean, that's what happens when you really think about it. But he wasn't necessarily even the wrong person. He was still an accomplice. He was still in on it. He still did really bad stuff.
Yeah, can't.
I mean, he's jacking the dude, you know. It was so much harder to watch.
Yeah. Well, and I wanted to. Here's my big smart point for this episode. Menace to Society is the urban version of Less Than Zero. I'm bringing our whole show around to the name of our show, to the finale of season one. This is Less Than Zero. In that world, there's no one redeeming. There's maybe a character that you might find not completely repulsive, but everybody's irredeemable. There is no hope. It's just, this is how it is. It's not trying to do what John Singleton did, give you some, hey, maybe there's a way out of here. It's like, no, this is and this is the way it is. And it's cyclical. It's society. It's the way we were raised. This is Less Than Zero. And once I started thinking of it that way, I was like, well, I can enjoy this because I'm not looking for hope or a point. I'm looking for them to tell me how it, quote, is, unquote.
Correct. Well, which I'm very glad that I was able to give you that little, I don't know if I can do this, man, because it probably took you into a different viewing mindset.
It did.
I literally kicked my feet up by the fire pit with a stogie and was like, all right, let's go on this journey. And within the first 30 seconds, I was like, oh, God. And it never got better. And I was thinking about this in the, you know, how many, you know, gangster, you know, like mafia movies exist, and how there are evil people doing evil stuff in there with no redeeming capabilities. Yeah.
Who's good and good fellows? No one.
Exactly. No one. And then I can't believe you tied it all the way back to Less Than Zero. I find that absolutely amazing, because that was the rich, you know, the very ultra kids of the ultra rich of Beverly Hills, mm-hmm. you know, kind of thing, who are just in the, like, basically nobody had any redeeming characters anyway. So these exist in so many different versions of cinema. And that's where I needed the time to get to. Because the first, you're just reacting. You're like, oh my God. I have a visceral reaction.
Yes. As we wrap it up, my final thought about this is, don't be a menace. I had to go back and look at Don't Be a Menace.
Oh my God, no.
After all of this stuff. We've talked about it a few times on the show. I want to say that, first of all, there are very funny things on Don't Be a Menace. But when I watched the send up of the shooting drive-by scene in Don't Be a Menace that was parodying both of these movies and their drive-by scenes, I gotta say, it left a bad taste in my mouth. And I felt like I kind of thought maybe this is how Coolio felt with Gangsta's Paradise, and when, you know, Weird Al did Amish Paradise, and how he wasn't happy with it because he's like, that's such a serious song and you made fun of it. And when I think about how gritty Ricky's death is and how emotionally painful it is, and what an amazing moment it is in cinema, and what a watershed moment in film this is, that it did sort of like, maybe you don't make fun of, first of all, drive-by shootings. Second of all, such an amazing scene. I get that it's parody, but it's also different than just saying, what'd you say about my mama? I mean, I don't know. It did seem like it was in poor taste. And I'm like, oh, that's what Coolio was talking about.
Yeah. My only counter to that is, Coolio was a parody by a white guy. Don't Be a Menace was created by the Wayans brothers. You know, like, the Wayans brothers were like, I mean, they were flying high with comedy. You know what I mean? And after all of these years of these movies coming out, and I mean, we just talked about two, there's many others. You know, this, we were kind of heading at a time when parodies were going to start kind of becoming a thing. And they spearheaded a lot of that kind of stuff. So it might have been like the breath of fresh air that everybody that people wanted, you know, or maybe I'm full of shit. I have absolutely no idea because I don't know anything about Don't Be a Menace other than I think I've seen a number of scenes. I don't even know if I've seen the movie.
Mm-hmm.
I remember the trailer.